With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, here we go.
Pac-12 fans, this one's for you.
Put your hands up, man!
This is the Pac-12 Apostles.
Keeping it real.
And only the truth lives here. Pac-12 Apostles.
The Pac-12, where does it stand right now? Big changes in the landscape of college football right now, in recruiting, in divisions, coaches. Where is the conference right now? And speaking of divisions, the Pac-12 has eliminated the North and South divisions. How this will impact who plays in the conference championship game and things going forward. Now, Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban just got in a big girl fight about recruiting inducements. Who's being hypocritical? What's the truth about that? The NCAA just changed the scholarship limit for the next 2 years. So you can sign more than 25 players just as long as you stay below the 85 scholarship limit and the unintended consequences that they don't give a damn about. And of course, the transfer portal is bearing fruit and taken away from the Pac-12. And how is the Pac-12 doing in recruiting? I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden, and this is the Pac-12 Apostles. So, Ralph, as we stand May 19th, 2022, in the year of our Lord, the Pac-12 is in an interesting spot because you have USC, who's doing everything it can to come up. You have UCLA, who has retained Chip Kelly. They seem to be moving in the right direction, even though maybe recruiting has not gone to the upper tier level. Dan Lanning looks to be doing a good job over at Oregon. Is the conference getting more top heavy is the question with like other conferences?
It's hard to tell because so many more chips need to fall. I'm looking forward to these teams getting back on the field because there's just so much change with recruits coming in, with the transfer portal, with the new coaches that are in place. I just really like to get a look at what some of these teams are going to look like because it, you know, I want to say that, you know, teams are doing well and moving in the right direction, but, you know, there have been teams that we thought that about. We found out that wasn't necessarily the case, like the Jimmy Lake era in Washington, which was fully endorsed by Chris Peterson. And, you know, and they can still at this point tout that they've had the most draft picks in the whole Pac-12 since 2018. Like some things are going well for Washington, but we know for a fact based on what went on the field that it it was not actually trending in the right direction. We talked a lot last year about, this being the year that was going to be the reloading year for Utah, which is going to give a lot of other people the opportunity to assert themselves in the South. And Utah ended up getting their shit together midseason and blowing everybody away. And so, you know, until we actually see these guys on the field, it really, like, the teams that are trending up, like University of Arizona, maybe they are not, you know, when it comes down to actually getting between the lines. And, you know, the biggest mystery to me right now is USC, because they lost talent, they added talent, they changed everything about the coaching staff. And is it enough turnover to get rid of the culture that they were steeped in? And is it enough talent to compete right away? I have so many questions going into this upcoming season that it just needs to play out. I feel less sure of things than I ever have.
Yeah. It's a very interesting time in the landscape, right? Because when it comes to recruiting, right, USC has clearly had an uptick in their recruiting in the skill positions. They have got more five stars in the last 2 years than they've gotten in probably the last three or four combined. But they still don't have linemen on either end, on the defensive lineman or offensive lineman. They're building a 7-on-17. You have Washington, who you believe is going to be well coached with DeBoer, but they are like a three-star haven right now. And it's not that you can't win with three-star prospects. It's just, if you want to be able to, you know, win at the elite level, if you want to be a national championship contender, you can't be doing that. It just doesn't work, because eventually you run out of talent. Look at Cincinnati. As many players as they had drafted, they had, what would they have, like eight players drafted in the NFL draft, six or eight players drafted. That still wasn't enough to stay on the field with Alabama. Wasn't even close. So with that being said, how do you expect, you know, anything to be different, or you to be able to compete for national championships, if you can't secure that elite talent? And the Pac-12 has to find a way to keep that talent in the conference. But the biggest problem has been is that you've had Arizona State initially say that we're not going to participate in this NIL thing. We're going to work on the NFL model. Same thing with Washington at first. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, hold on. We can't compete in recruiting right now. And some people are calling it unfair, and no, but everybody has the opportunity. I mean, are there any shortage of multimillionaires at Stanford, at US, at UCLA, at Washington, at Arizona State, at Arizona? Are there any shortage? Is there a shortage of money at any of those places?
No. And you got places like Colorado where people went out there and got a head start economically on cash crops like cannabis. So, you know, there are moneyed people everywhere all over the Pac-12. I mean, if you don't think they have money in Salt Lake, then you're not watching Real Housewives. Exactly. Everybody, it seems, even Corvallis has got a couple of billionaires attached to, I think the founder of U-Haul or something like that is a beef. So, there's money everywhere. Maybe not in Pullman, but like there is money to be found all over the place to make sure, that you're able to put together some type of, at least collective. And the ASU, Ray Anderson saying that they're not going to get caught up in the arms race of NIL was really confusing to me, because that's like, you know, that's like a restaurant saying we're not going to advertise. We're just going to focus on feeding people lunch.
Yeah.
But like, how are you going to feed people lunch if they don't know where to go to get that lunch? And so one of the dumber things on a long list of very dumb things that Ray Anderson has espoused regarding the football program over the last couple of years. And And now I think they've kind of backpedaled on that, and they've started to try to course correct, but it might be too little too late. They were hoping to put together money packages to save some of the people that were transferring out of the program, like Ricky Pearsall and Jermaine Lole. But, you know, I don't think either one of those guys is coming back.
Well, the problem is that people – I think the fans have now demonized the players in the situation. But how can you demonize the players in this situation when nobody criticizes an employee for choosing Apple over Google because the salary is higher and the bennies are better?
Yeah, I have not seen a lot of people blaming the players or calling them greedy, and I've not seen any of that. What I've seen people say is, they don't want to participate in this. Like, they don't want to watch anymore. They don't want to be a fan. And that's fine. Like, you're well within your right to choose different forms of entertainment and how you spend your weekend.
Good. It sounds real good until games start on Saturday. It sounds real good because I think that there are people that are turned off by the movement and all of that by players. But if you are a real college football fan, if you love college football, like it's like if you love the NFL or you love the NBA, you can, your team that you root for can do something that turns you off and it makes you switch teams, right? I changed from the Chicago Bulls to the Lakers after the way that they did Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen. I didn't want to be aligned with them anymore. And I was a young kid. So
yeah, but you didn't go to Chicago Bulls University.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying is that if you are a true college football fan, you don't just love your team, you actually love college football. So you are going to still love college football if you are one of the P1 fans. Like, you don't just turn away from college football. That's not the way it works. Hey, you can dislike the system because it feels uncomfortable. But after, whenever change happens, it's always messy. It is uncomfortable. It makes people feel weird because they don't like it. But after, and then initially, like, things go awry. But the market will correct itself. Like, how many times are boosters going to be willing to give out, or these collectives give out, this amount of money to players, which doesn't allow other teams to necessarily be competitive? If you're Texas A&M, how many times are you going to be able to pay the entire class this amount of money when some of these kids are going to transfer out because they got so many kids in, they're all not going to be able to see the field. So some of them are going to want out. Some of the kids are not going to live up to expectations. So how many times is this going to happen? I think the answer is a lot fewer than people think.
I see. Here's the difference for me. A lot of the stuff that people cling to their collegiate allegiances for, it all comes down to, like, the hope that every once in a great while, if you're a Georgia Tech fan or a Colorado State fan or a Cincinnati fan, that everything will come together for a good season, and then in rare cases a great season, right?
Yeah.
And I think that the current system, though it has many flaws and a lot of things that I would like to see changed, creates the opportunity for a team to put together something over the course of 3 or 4 years that ends up being special, that everybody then has the ability to cash in on, whether it's people's draft stock going up or assistant coaches getting better jobs or head coaches moving on to bigger contracts. But the incentive was always there to build toward that thing. One of the things about the NIL and transfer portal era is, if you are like me, somebody whose mother and couple of uncles went to University of Wyoming, and so you you have retained that. And you know, I've been a University of Wyoming fan my entire life. The idea that they could put together a decent team over 3-4 years is one of the things that keeps me coming back. But if I'm watching a game early in the season when they schedule a money game against like Tennessee or something to get blown out, but to have some cash on hand, and a guy like defensive end Solomon Bird gets 2 or 3 sacks, the thing that's going through my head now is, I wonder what team he's going to be playing for next year.
Mm.
And that's not fun. Like, and by the way, Solomon Bird, congratulations on your commitment to USC. So like it's just one of those things where there's a downside to every good thing, right? And it's an immediate downside. You could have players leave in the middle of the season to cash in on the idea that they blew up at one school. And I believe that will happen. And so when people said that they were done with college football because of players having a voice on social issues, I did not believe them. Because ultimately, I believe that the love of college football and the excitement of game day and the community fostered by college football would be the thing that brought people back. When people complained about coaching movement and coaching salaries and yada, 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 and they said they weren't, you know, going to watch college football anymore, I did not believe them. When people are saying now that they're surrendering their season tickets after 30, 35 years, that it's too much to keep up with, that not only are they confused by who is coming and going on the roster, but that they also are having a hard time following along because they got used to recruiting being primarily from high school and now they don't really know what's going on, and the season going in is kind of a mystery. Like, I actually believe people when they say that these are reasons, especially in the Pac-12 when you have so many other entertainment options. I believe
their frustration. No. I believe their frustration. But some Pac-12 fans, I think that is the issue, is that we don't have enough P1 fans. That we don't have enough people who this is their religion as well. And that's the difference. And that's one of the things that when I've been around recruits now, I've been around everybody from Nico Iamaleva, Jaden Rashada, some of the top wide receivers and DBs in the country. 5-star prospects, high 4-star prospects. They are all talking about the same thing, is that when they go on their visits, right? When they take unofficials, when they go to games, they love the game day experiences. And the game day, in the Pac-12, they've loved the game day experiences at Oregon. They've loved them at Utah. They have loved them at Washington previously. And that's about it at the Pac-12. And we need to increase the game day experiences, like the sheer, like where fans keep talking about put a good product on the field and we'll show up, right? Like, that's actually counterintuitive, because fans should actually be cheering when you're the loudest and the most when your team is bad.
That's because how it's ever worked, though. It's not going to start working that way.
I know, but I'm just saying that shouldn't that be how it should be?
But this is like the beginning of Jerry Maguire, when it's like less clients, more personability, and then all of a sudden he's sitting at the table with Jay Moore getting fired. Like, that's a nice pie-in-the-sky thing, but like I'll just give you, since you brought up Jaden Rashada, I'll just give you a point of frustration here. In the era before NIL, and I'm not saying this is good, okay? So I want to be really, really clear on that before anybody's like, you're against kids getting paid. Absolutely not. I've been the one banging the table for it, right? For the longest, you too. So you have a kid like Jaden Rashada, who a couple years ago goes out, gives a bunch of interviews saying that, like, hey, loyalty is really important to me. My dad went to Arizona State. When the dust settles, they're going to be one of my top schools because of that relationship. And here we are in the NIL era, where he's going all over the country trying to figure out like what the best situation for him is going to be. And Arizona State doesn't even make his top 7 because they're not competitive in the NIL landscape. That's a thing that Arizona State fans, I don't care whether you think it's good or not, Arizona State fans look at that and they're like, why would I follow this? Why would I care about this?
Okay. See, but I agree that some of it is NIL, right? But for Arizona State specifically, I mean, if you had used that example with, like, you know, with another school that's not in absolute turmoil and upside down right now, I think it would be a little better, if that makes sense, because Arizona State is potentially going at allegations. I mean, having allegations, they may be going on probation. I think that there's so much more that goes into the situation with Arizona State, how kids look at them in recruiting, than anything else, if that makes sense.
Oh, no, no, it totally makes sense. It would be but
they still would not, even without all of that, I'm not sure if they would have made the top seven if they're not participating in the NIL game. Because if you are just realistically, if you are a kid and you have 10 schools that are willing to pay you $1 million or more per year, right? And your dad, the school you've been a fan of your entire life, wants to give you $0. And the other schools are also better than them at the same time.
Right.
Are you even going to seriously consider the other school?
No, but if you're a fan of that school and you watch that happen, what incentive do you have to go sit in the stands and be louder? Because your team is in turmoil, so you should go there and cheer even harder.
Okay, or cheer harder by creating a collective like these other schools have done and donate money to it, donate millions to it. I think that is an additional answer. I mean, because that's what these other schools have done. The money's not coming out of the university. The money's coming from donors who've put together fake-ass charities or collectives and are, you know, giving kids money to go to certain schools.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
And I have, and that leads us to the Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban argument. So here is what Nick Saban said yesterday, in, you know, in his little fireside chat. And then we'll play right after what happened with Jimbo Fisher in his press conference today. Okay, so Ralph, Nick Saban basically said that Texas A&M paid for their entire recruiting class, that Jackson State got a kid, Travis Hunter, for $1 million plus. And did you see that as him being critical of it, or him saying, or was this him begging his own donors to do more because they had the number two recruiting class?
Here's how I took it. And it's possible that I'm reading more into this than needs to be read into. I didn't look at it as Nick Saban being whiny. I saw this as another in a series of warning shots that he's fired off. He might have been irresponsible with some of the information that he shared in that meeting to those people. However, what he's trying to say is
knowledge. Like, he didn't say anything that other people didn't know.
Deion Sanders is denying it. Jimbo Fisher's denying it. So, like, the public knowledge part of it is debated. Like, what?
Well, the school doesn't pay them. So, like, yeah, they're going to be like, yeah, we didn't pay. No, he got a deal, a legitimate deal from Barstool. There's nothing wrong or illegal.
Barstool has denied that any money changed hands. Travis Hunter just came out today and said, if I have $1 million, why is my mom's still hanging out with five kids in a three-bedroom house? Like, Deion Sanders said, I don't even get paid $1 million. Like, so Travis Hunter's been pretty forceful in his denial of what Nick Saban is saying here. I think it's common knowledge to everybody involved that $20+ million changed hands through the formation of a collective in order for Texas A&M to secure the class that they put together. Yes. And guys that were deciding between Alabama and Texas A&M, like Anthony Lucas, that was, you know, that's one of the things that's probably put a spur in Nick Saban's boot. But I didn't look at this as Nick Saban complaining about Lane Kiffin, complaining about Jimbo Fisher, complaining about Deion Sanders. I looked at Nick Saban saying, hey, if those guys are doing those things, what they don't understand is if I do it, it's over. If I have the ability to take the same advantage of what they're doing, instead of saying, all right, my kids are now opened up to market themselves, figure out what market value is for their goods and services. And he said his players went out and collected over $3 million last year marketing themselves based on their place at Alabama. But he said, if we have the ability to go $1 million per kid, do you think I'm not going to recruit better than Jimbo Fisher? Do you think I'm not going to get these kids that Deion gets? If we're playing this game too, do you think I'm not going to win?
Okay. So that's the thing that people got upset about is that Jimbo, he got to grandstanding because I didn't understand Jimbo's like fervent anger about it. That
I think for Jimbo, you just got to put your foot down somewhere, right? So he gets to go out there and say, we didn't cheat. He's a cheater. Look into him. His dad should have slapped him.
But there wasn't cheating. Like, even if this is what they did, it wasn't cheating. It's within the rules.
Right. But what Jimbo's saying is, Jimbo wants to say that if you want to imply that what we did, which was by the rules, if you want to imply that that was dirty, why doesn't someone go look into your time at Michigan State? Why doesn't somebody go look into your time at LSU? Why doesn't, and the weirdest thing that Jimbo Fisher is saying is, I know that Nick Saban cheated because I work for him, but I've never cheated in my life. Buddy, if you worked for Nick Saban while he was cheating, then you cheated.
Correct. Dude, that's the thing, is that I don't understand his like arrogance to act like that. Because I do understand him being Actually, I don't even understand him being with him being frustrated with Nick with what Nick Saban said, because if I were him, I'd be like, all right, cool. Then you should have recruited better, buddy. You should have recruited better.
Oh man,
I mean, what else? They didn't break any rules. This is the NCAA's fault with how they handled this entire situation. And I actually like the fact that these collectives are playing within. They're playing in the gray area. They're playing within the rules. If the NCAA,
which the NCAA has already come out and tried to address, to say that if they can prove that anybody's been in contact with anyone,
shut up, they're not going to do anything anyway.
What they're asking for, they're asking for snitches, because that's the only way the NCAA.
Who the hell is going to snitch? I mean, really, really think about that. Like, it's got to be somebody who, because if you are a fan of the schools. And you are part of these collectives, right? And you have donated money. Are you going to snitch and mess up your own team's situation, even if a kid left and kind of burned you? No.
If you're an assistant coach at a school and you're texting back and forth with one of your players or their parents, trying to ask them why they're about to jump in the portal, kind of the way that everyone knew that Jordan Addison was about to jump in the portal when he was at Pitt, right? Because a big part of this is the Pac-12 all freaking out about what USC is doing. Because the collective belief around the Pac-12 is that USC is actively recruiting players that are under scholarship elsewhere through third party.
Yes.
Like go-between type thing, which, by the way, is happening.
That is absolutely happening. But the thing is that if my son has a relationship with a kid at another school, right?
Yeah.
And which in high school, even now. And he says, and his friend's like, man, I don't like it over here. Stuff's not great. I want to win. We're a losing. And my son says, yo, why don't you see about coming over here? I'll ask my coach what he thinks about you. And he goes to go ask the coach. He's like, bruh, I mean, shit, if he wants to move, I mean, I'm not going to ask him to move or anything. But if he wants to move, if he wants to come apply to our school, cool. And then my son goes back to the kid and says, yo, he said, if you want to apply, you know, then he can have a conversation with you. So now, and then you have that, and then the kid talks to another kid at Modern Day and St. John Bosco. He's like, okay, cool. I'm gonna go talk to all these schools. Like, how is that? I mean, these are just relationships.
Yeah, I guess. So here's been my experience so far. Multiple parents, not players, not coaches, multiple parents of Pac-12 players have reached out to me over the course of the last few months to say, hey, do you have such and such's number? Hey, do you have a way to back channel? My kid's not getting playing time. My kid's looking for other options. Can you put out a feeler? Can you reach out to this person? I don't want to do it directly. Can you see if this school has scholarship space so that if we decide to jump into the portal, that would be one of our primary destinations?
Yes.
So the facilitators in this instance, I've not had a coach reach out to me. I've not had a staffer reach out to me. I've had multiple Pac-12 parents reach out to me and say, hey, what are things looking like at such and such school? Hey, do you still have a relationship with such and such assistant? If we were in the portal, would there potentially be interest from their end? Because there's interest from our end.
Yep.
And when I'm in that situation, I say, I'll make a call.
Of course.
And if people think that people think that I'm facilitating cheating, like I genuinely do not give a shit. Especially because it was not orchestrated by any school. It's by the parent.
Yep.
Which is what I would do for my kid.
It is like, oh, you stole my such a no, dude. They chose to leave. They actually actively sought to leave. You hear me?
Right.
Like
right. They like so they were leaving like they were, anyway.
Yes. And they were just looking. Like I didn't call them up. I didn't say, oh yeah, hey yo, you can come over here if you want. No, they were out. Dude, it is like drugs. I say this about drugs all the time because people, they are so mad at drug dealers. And I get it. It is, and I'm 100% understand it. But this is like personal responsibility people being solely mad at drug dealers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like where they're like, it's the drug dealers. They need to be put in jail. Well, drugs don't sell them. I'm sorry. Drug dealers don't sell drugs. There are not billboards. There are not like, if you want crack, you have to actively seek it out. It doesn't just show up at your front door. If you want heroin, it doesn't just actively show up. You have to go find it. You hear me?
Right. It's not people standing in the aisles of Costco giving you free samples of cheddar biscuits.
Yes. So, and that's the same way with this recruiting thing. When kids want to leave, they are actively searching. I've been in a situation where we were considering transferring high schools. And do you know how a couple is that it was interest on my end that actually drove more interest from the coaches initially. And then as soon as I was like, nope, we're good. Then now I'm at a 7-on-7 tournament this last weekend. I have a booster, if you will, from another school and another coach saying, hey, yo, if you're not happy over there, let us know. Full scholarship here. This. I'm like, nah, man, we're good. It is just like, yes, there are people who will come try to see about you, but it's the majority of time the parents or the handlers or anybody else reaching out about that.
Because you have a limited time to achieve what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Correct.
And the unfortunate thing is, because I can easily admit that it's not the best thing in the world for everybody to always be looking elsewhere, but the college coaching profession is one of the dirtiest, least above board, least honest, most structurally encouraging of a lack of integrity of any industry I've ever seen. The contract for assistant coaches are very short, right?
Yeah.
They are incentivized to be mega yes men to inflated ego, super millionaire control freaks. And they have a limited amount of time, the same way that the players do, to impress those coaches. Okay, so assistant football coaches, and I don't think I'm telling anybody anything they don't know, and if you want to argue with me on this, I'll give you 20 very specific examples of things that happened just this last year, right? But assistant coaches are coaching for their jobs. So they have to be there 15 minutes early. Yeah, all these offensive analysts, like they're the people that are out there setting up cones and breaking down practice and putting together practice. They all... You know, a coach will ask them what they're up to, and they're like, oh, I'm just working on this game plan thing for an opponent that's 10 weeks from now, just grinding, going over film. You know, your ability to have connections with recruits is what makes you valuable. So you have to play that game of like selling yourself to these kids, even though you know you're not going to be there. So you got to lie to them to get their attention so that you not only have value to the staff that you're on, but the potential future staff that you might be on. Because any recruit's name that is attached to yours is money in your pocket, right? The incentive structure for assistant coaches created a situation in which there is no loyalty, there is no honesty, and there is no integrity. Those things already don't exist within the structure of college football. A good coach, a truly good coach, can make the most of any ingredients they are given. Just like a good chef. You give them ingredients and they can maximize the combination and the flavor of those ingredients to make you the best possible meal. The insecure chef looks at those ingredients and says, if I don't have good ingredients, I'm not a good chef.
Yep.
90% of college football coaches are the insecure chef. And so you will have a coach hired into a situation with elite level athletes, 80 elite level athletes in a program, and they will take one look at those athletes and be like, I can't cook with this. They were losers last year. How am I supposed to make them better? Let me look in the portal. Let me bring these kids in my office and tell them that there's probably not a home for them here, and I'll help them go look elsewhere. Let me force 10 to 15 kids into the portal so that I have room to look elsewhere. That's the way that the actual coaching profession works. Yeah, is people trying exactly. to get in their guys. And there's no integrity in it. It's disgusting. And the idea that we blame the kids for like being forced to play along with it has always been a point of frustration for me. But what we learned about fans is they don't care if coaches are playing that game. They do care if the kids are playing that game. And so while it might not be fair for college football fandom to be hanging in the balance of the new rules that are in place that allow kids to benefit, it is. It is, because for some reason, people's reaction to kids looking for a better situation for themselves makes people more upset than when coaches do it or when kids are forced into that situation, because the transfer portal is a nasty place. And I got to tell you, 30% of the kids in there are not there willingly. They were pushed in.
Yep. Yeah, and now that brings up the next aspect of this and how it's going to impact Pac-12 teams is the scholarship limits. So the NCAA came out with a new rule that it allows teams to get to 85 scholarships finally by 2 years of being able to sign classes bigger than 25 kids. Now, I think that this is going to end up lasting longer, but one of the unintended consequences is that there are rules within the NCAA's bylaws that allow when a new coach like Lincoln Riley goes to USC, he can actually purge some of the roster. He can go to the roster and say, all right, cool, I'm essentially going to cut these kids from the football team, not from financial support. So they still keep their scholarship, essentially, still keep their stipend for housing, all of that, but they are no longer football players and count toward that scholarship limit.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's going to allow teams of players of new coaches, because everybody's like, why is USC signing so many more DBs and wideouts? Because they're cutting kids.
Yep.
And the kid has a choice. Either I'm going to hop in the portal because I still want to play college football, or I'm just going to go be a regular student and keep my scholarship.
Right. Which we had a bunch of offensive linemen at UCLA do that when Chip Kelly came in with an axe and he was cutting dudes left and right. You had a freshman linebacker at Arizona State who had been committed to Arizona State since he was 14, stay and finish nursing school. Like that's becoming a thing of where people are put in a position where, you know, am I going to go to the portal and have an uncertain future, or am I going to have my school completely paid for and be on scholarship while I'm here, but have no access to football?
Yeah. Yep. So, so people don't realize that in that now kids are going to get pushed out. So if you are a kid, what are you going to do? Actually, if you are a fan, are you upset with this? Is the question?
I think that the average fan is thinking about what benefits them, just like the average college football coach and program is thinking about what benefits them, just like the average kid is thinking about what benefits them. So it really depends on the situation. So if you are what's the school that's kind of up against the scholarship limit? We had heard about a Pac-12 school that was like over 85 and we're having to, if you're that school, if you're in a situation where in order to improve your talent, you have to go out and you have to move a bunch of people around, that could come back to haunt you, because if you piss off the right high school coach or whatever, you know, that stuff can spill out onto social media and create image issues. But like, let's say that you're Arizona State and you're bordering 70 scholarships and on the verge of possibly losing even more due to sanctions, the idea that you can rebound from your situation even quicker by replenishing as fast as possible is attractive, right? And so what I'm interested in is all of these contributing walk-ons that have been told by their college coaches, hey, we'd love to put you on scholarship, we just don't have room for it. But like, it's a school like Stanford that operates at 75 scholarships on the regular.
Yep.
And now the NCAA is saying, well, we're not going to limit it to 25. So if you want to go ahead and bump it up to 85, you can. I'm interested to see what happens when those walk-ons look that coach in the eye that told them they didn't have room. Because they were lying about not having room.
Exactly.
The truth is definitely going to get told. But I really hate that the NCAA does things to retroactively try to make up for certain issues like the transfer portal or the non-eligibility COVID year or things like that, when they have the ability to possibly have some foresight. Like, I've always thought that the 25 scholarship limit, especially with the introduction of the transfer portal, that you should have given some respect to the idea that, like, okay, well, you know, your primary source of talent is going to come from the high school level. So you need to lock in 15 of those scholarships and guarantee that that's the direction that they go in. Yeah. And then let's say that you can get 7 from the portal, right?
Okay.
And then 3 have to come from junior college, because that's the only way you're going to save junior college football, which is on the decline every single year. There's 20, 25 less junior college football programs right now than there were 5 years ago. So the NCAA could have structured the scholarship limit to ensure the health of high school football, to ensure the future of college football, to help prop up junior college. They could have done those things, but they don't. They don't. And it's just, it's an embarrassment. And Mark Emmert is going off into the sunset with having had a truly useless tenure. And I think that, you know, I think that you gotta, anytime his name is mentioned for the rest of eternity, he might be sleeping on a $20,000 mattress. So he might be able to lay his head down comfortably at night. But I don't think that anybody who's a fan of college football should ever mention his name without attaching the man who helped ruin this sport.
Yep. 100%.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, man, as we look at these scholarship limits and all of this stuff, who do you think is going to be the biggest beneficiaries of this? I mean, because obviously, like we just talked about, schools with new coaches are going to benefit greatly from this, first thing, because yeah, they're able to cut players and kind of purge their roster and get to 85 scholarships.
I think one of the biggest benefits will be kids that are suffocating in the portal.
Yes.
Because there will be a little bit of extra room for some of those kids that are trapped in there to get out. Correct. I think high school, as with many of the decisions made by the NCAA, high school football players will suffer. As far as programs, everything always benefits the best resourced programs. And so USC is one of the best resourced programs, and they have been severely underperforming. This gives them the opportunity to progress to the mean of who they are as a program. I don't think Oregon really has these types of issues right now, but it really just depends on what resources you have behind you moving forward. And I think that everything points to, for the first time in a long time, all things being sunshine and roses for the University of Southern California.
Well, I mean, I think that they are going to be greatly benefited, that USC is clearly the beneficiary of a lot of people willing to put their money where their mouth is to make USC a really good program again, right? But I think that we're also seeing USC and Oregon, because Colin Cowherd hinted at a major shift for USC coming up very soon in the next 18 months. And I don't think that that's exclusive to them. I think that you may see that from Oregon, from some other schools, that you may see some movement in the Pac-12 or some sort of media agreement that is different than the rest of the conference. So I think that there are opportunities for other schools to capitalize on those things. Now, I also believe that if a school like Utah got in on NIL a little bit, right, that yeah, they would be hugely benefited from it. But I think that you're going to have some schools win in the short run, but after the market corrects itself, because these are the people who are giving the money are successful business people. Were successful at their jobs, very yeah, successful, to be able to give hundreds of thousands of dollars or fifties of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars to be able to help out in recruiting and you know, with the inducements and all of this stuff. So they are going to figure out a structure that makes sense for them, and because they're not used to throwing good money after bad. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. And we're definitely pretty close to the first time that a booster sues an athlete. That's coming. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. That's absolutely coming.
100%. And but now we're in a case of with the Pac-12. Oh, I want to shift, because we totally kind of skipped over the Pac-12 with the divisions, right?
Right.
So now the divisions are changing in the Pac-12. there are, instead of the six North teams, six South teams, they now for 2022 going forward, so this upcoming season, they have scrapped the divisions, but they're keeping the schedule as it is. So the Oregon's still going to play all the North teams. They're going to play the other five North teams, and then they're going to play four South teams. And the and instead of the winner of the North playing the winner of the South in the Pac-12 championship, now it is going to be the two teams with the highest winning percentage. Now, if you go back to the, you know, since 2011, right, how this would have impacted the conference championship game. In 2011, it was number nine Oregon versus UCLA. It would have been number four Stanford versus number nine Oregon. In 2012, it would have been number eight Stanford. Oh, it was number eight Stanford versus number 16 UCLA. It would have been number five Oregon versus number eight Stanford. In 2013, it wouldn't have changed with Stanford and Arizona State. Number 14, it wouldn't have changed with Oregon and Arizona. 15, instead of it being Stanford versus USC, it would have been Stanford versus Oregon. In 2016, Washington, Colorado wouldn't have changed. 17, USC, Stanford wouldn't have changed. 2018, it wouldn't have been Washington versus Utah. It would have been Washington versus Washington State. And in 19, it wouldn't have changed. Utah versus Oregon. 2020, instead of it being USC, actually, I'm going to throw that one out because everybody didn't play the same amount of games because it would have been USC versus Washington. But under the new system, it would have been USC versus Colorado. But then how do we know if Washington would have beaten Oregon? Like there's so I'm throwing 2020 out. And then last year, Oregon versus Utah, there wouldn't have been a change either. So half the year. So since 2011, so that's 10 years, because we're throwing out 2020, there was no change in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of those years. So it's not going to create like a huge seismic shift, but it's going to get interesting for the scheduling because there's not going to be another, you know, like a north-south scheduling. So I think it's going to be important to keep some of the rivalries, right? Like obviously the Apple Cup has to stay. Oregon versus Oregon State has to stay. Does Oregon Washington have to stay? Does, you know what I mean? Like which ones have to stay? And then also the Pacific Northwest teams all want to play either USC or UCLA in California every year for recruiting purposes. Right. So there's going to be some tricky stuff going on in the conference itself as the schedule changes in 2023, because it won't be divisional play, like because the schedule was already set as is.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me. Part of my initial reaction was like, well, as a Pac-12 South fan, this is going to adversely affect at some point the Pac-12 South. But if the Pac-12 South stops even mattering, I would hope that whatever school wins their division, and if they don't end up in the actual Pac-12 championship next year, that they don't hang a Pac-12 conference division banner. That would be really annoying. if Utah goes 8-5, they don't make the Pac-12 championship, and then you have a 2022 Pac-12 South champions banner flying out in Salt Lake. I would just hope something like that doesn't happen. But this doesn't bother me any. I don't think the divisions are necessary anyway. As long as you get the two best teams. Now, I do think one weird caveat is it's the two teams with the highest winning percentage and not the two teams that are ranked the highest.
Yeah.
So if you run into a situation where it's like UCLA is the number 10 team in the country, Colorado is the number 12 team in the country, and Oregon's the number 9 team in the country. And you would say, like, oh, then Oregon and UCLA should play each other. But based on winning percentages, if it's Oregon and Colorado, like, that's not a thing that gives the Pac-12 the best opportunity to play in the highest level bowl games. And so I would have hoped that that was something that was included and maybe still will be in the future. But I do think that it should be the highest ranked teams and not necessarily the teams with the two. Because you want to put yourself in the position to have the best opportunity to play in the biggest bowl games. You want to grant your schools as much resources as possible. And I'm not sure that that would ever even come into play, but you just don't want to have something in place where it might, you know?
Yep, for sure. For sure, for sure. Now, as we're looking at, I guess, the coming up summer for the Pac-12 schools, we thought that May 1st would signal the end of kind of the transfer portal drama in terms of players hopping in the portal. We still got to figure out where Jordan Addison goes. We still have to figure out where did Lole from Arizona State commit yet?
No, he's like visiting Louisville right now or something. Can we talk about Jordan Addison though, and the fact that the Pac-12 teams all got together and Ray Anderson gave a speech saying that people need to stay within the rules?
Yeah, that was the, if I were sitting in that meeting, everybody had to be sitting in that meeting like, Are you serious? Are you the one talking to us about that? Mr. We brought recruits on campus violating COVID rules while nobody else could have people on campus. Y'all did. You guys had to get rid of a bunch of your coaches for violating rules and being so flagrant about it. Is that who's lecturing us? The guy who also can't win in basketball or in football? Are you lecturing us? How about no, my friend? How about no, pal? I got earmuffs for you.
Okay, so then what about the perspective that, like, one of your defensive ends just probably got $500,000 to go to – or one of your linebackers probably just got $500,000 to go to USC, and there was probably some sort of arrangement prior to the transfer. Do you just not say something? If you're Ray Anderson, do you stand up and say, I forfeited my right to comment on the fact that USC is purchasing players off of our team?
You should have gotten... How do I explain? Like, if you are them, you should have had your NIL stuff in place. And guess what? The kid might still be there, or maybe just maybe you should have had your shit together with your team. That way it wasn't falling apart at the seams. So yeah. But then they just took a kid from Florida, quarterback from Florida, Emory Jones. While they have five other scholarship quarterbacks, so you're doing a poor ass job if you have five quarterbacks on scholarship, and you, my friend, don't think that any of them is good enough to be your starter.
Yeah, that's a mess in and of itself. And I've talked to people affiliated with the team that are like, why would our coaches come out and say after one practice that there's no starting quarterback here, that we might have to look elsewhere for a starting quarterback? And also, what quarterback in his right mind would look at a staff and say, that staff has openly admitted they don't have the ability to develop the quarterbacks on their roster, I want to go play there?
Yep.
But Emory Jones got himself a truck and up to $75,000 in NIL enticements to come to Arizona State. So they have put a foot forward in that area. But here's the issue with that. Would the expectation be, if only one player on your team at a certain position is getting money, wouldn't the expectation be that player plays?
Yep, exactly.
And who says that he's going to? He's going to have to beat out Daylon McLemore and Finn Collins and Trenton Bourget and Paul Tyson and Meredith. Like he's going to have to beat all those guys out. I'm assuming, unless it's like the situation with Jaden Daniels, where the entire idea of the competition is a farce because you have a relationship with that player and with their parent, where they are helping you with your illegal recruiting procedures. Therefore, you don't even have the right to bench that player when they produce your worst passing season since 1991.
No, you are 100%.
So,
right.
You know, what are they even going to do? But yeah, my whole thing is what, he's a hypocrite. You got to say something if that's what you believe. And we've now reached the point where Oklahoma has accused USC of cheating. Pitt has openly accused USC of cheating. Arizona State has openly accused USC of cheating with the support of Colorado and other institutions within the Pac-12. It's interesting to me that everybody can shit on Lincoln Riley and he doesn't have anything to say about it. However, Nick Saban mentions Jimbo Fisher's name and he's holding a press conference saying that Nick Saban should have been beat as a kid. Pac-12 teams really just don't have that same level of animosity and beef. But I do also want to bring up that Sua Cravens, former USC player, has come out and he has said that the only schools that did not offer him some type of enticement when he was a recruit, a five-star recruit, were Pac-12 schools because they believe that they're held to a different standard by the NCAA than the SEC. What did you think of those comments?
I think that he's clearly right by what happened with USC. But they were kind of flagrant. Like, there was some flagrancy going on with the Reggie Bush stuff. But still, like, it shouldn't have been illegal to begin with, first thing. So, listen, I'm 100%.
He was saying he was offered $10,000 to $20,000 to visit and that all the schools that were offering him money were southeast of Texas. And these are the schools that he was recruited by at the time. Tennessee, that are out in that region of the country, Florida, Arkansas, and Alabama.
All right, dude, all the $10,000 is for is to cover the airline trips for unofficials. Like, I'd be like,
you like Lloyd Christmas here in case I want seconds.
Yeah, I need 40,000 so I can book the PJ. So come, we'll come. Slide me 40,000. Actually, I need you to slide me 50. You can advertise here on the Pac-12 Apostles podcast. Advertise your business. I'll spend 2/3 of it on the private jet for us to fly out on the recruiting trip, and then the rest goes to the podcast. And just saying,
it's amazing that we had teams caught. What's incredible so far is that nothing has come out about prepaid Visa debit cards, which is how everybody was doing their dirty business.
Yeah, dude, like, you know, like $100,000 gift cards.
Come on. That's why I'm so pissed off at Tennessee for putting actual cash in a McDonald's bag.
Yes.
Exactly. Like, can you just use the debit cards the same way that everybody else does?
Yep. Well, you guys, that is the Pac-12 Apostles for today. I'm George Reister. He's Ralph Amsden. Always keep up with the show. Peace out.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.